Hi, everybody. Thanks for checking out an extra podcast episode this week from all of us at New Mexico in Focus. If you've seen any of our interviews that we've been putting out recently, you know that we've been focusing on the New Mexico media landscape. If you haven't, be sure to check out Monday's podcast, where executive producer Jeff Proctor spent nearly a half hour talking to the new editor at the Albuquerque Journal. That's Patrick Etheridge. Wednesday's episode featured Jeff's full interview with Albuquerque City Council President Pat Davis, who also runs four newspapers in the state. That's the Sandoval Signpost, the Edgewood Independent, the Corrales Common, and the Paper, which is based in Albuquerque. Today on the podcast, we're getting into some deeper analysis of the news ecosystem with two panel discussions among a handful of journalists. In our first segment, New Mexico in Focus host Gene Grant chats over Zoom with three newsroom leaders representing three distinct business models prevalent today: locally owned papers, corporate owned papers, and nonprofit news. Joining Gene are Algernon Damasa, he's editor at the Deming Headlight, Jessica Ansuarez, a news director with Gannett overseeing the Carlsbad Current Argus, Alamogordo Daily News, Ruidoso News, Las Cruces Sun News, and Farmington Daily Times. And our final panelist, Sean Griswold, editor of Source New Mexico. Here's Gene.
Now, starting off, let's peel back the curtain here and talk about ownership in news organizations. Our panelists represent three distinct business models prevalent today: locally owned papers, corporate ownership, and nonprofit news. Our group today can speak to how those ownership structures influence their approach to covering the news. Now, beginning with Sean, I got a question for all three of you. How does a nonprofit like Source New Mexico keep the lights on?
Okay, it's a great question. Mm-hmm. One, we are funded by donors, including and as well as grant recipients. All of our donors for any donation over $50 is posted on our website. Mm-hmm. Now State's Newsroom is the national organization founded in North Carolina. It was called North Carolina Policy Watch, and it was a couple wonks who used to work in state government over there, mm-hmm. looking at trying to adapt more and broader news coverage of the Capitol there. Mm. And that model has been now grown into nearly 40 newsrooms across the country. Source New Mexico opened in 2021. Mm-hmm. So State's Newsroom offers a sort of like HQ element. You know, they are our HR, our payroll. They help the back end for our website. And mm-hmm. so they take care of all of those elements from there. But after that, it's all hands off. Yeah. We run independently. We run, I operate and make our editorial decisions along with our staff members. We are responsible for hiring for freelancers and just the news of the day that we plan to do. And so our structure is based off of that. But as what keeps the lights going, it's donors and it's grant reporting.
Mm-hmm. Algernon, on your end of the world, how did the purchase of the Headlight from Gannett last year affect your paper's approach to covering your community? Did staffing philosophies change at all?
Well, it's interesting. It was a little bit like starting over. Yeah. The Deming Headlight had been a property of large corporations and conglomerates for a couple of decades, mm-hmm. and most recently with Gannett. And then it was purchased in November of last year by a local publisher, the Silver City Independent Publishing Company, which produces the Silver City Daily Press and the Silver City Independent. And so in some ways, it was really like starting over. I mean, what did we buy? We bought the name of the Deming Headlight, a few physical assets, and what subscribers were, still active with the paper. And the rest of it was starting over. I was brought back to be the editor. I had actually started at the Deming Headlight as a reporter some years ago. Mm. And so now I run the newsroom, and we have a reporting staff of three, if you count me, since I'm also reporting.
Mm-hmm. Not bad there. Jessica, on your end of the world, how does corporate ownership impact the way your paper serves local readers?
You know, it's an interesting question because I think we can all agree that when you are corporately owned, you have kind of a different set of priorities, right? You've got a corporation like Gannett who answers to its stockholders, mm-hmm. whose primary job is to make sure that the newspaper is generating a revenue to pay those stockholders. But when you're looking at it from the perspective of a newsroom, you still have staff that come in every day with the spirit of, we serve our community, we serve their interests, and we report on things that are important to them. But we definitely feel, I don't think anybody can deny it, we definitely feel the choices that are made up top by our corporate owners, mm-hmm. Every day on the ground in the newsroom, everything from staff cuts to the clipping of the purse strings. You know, when you lose staff, you certainly experience coverage gaps, and your readership feels that. And we have found that they've been very vocal about what they want from local newspapers and how our corporate owners are managing those papers within New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Jessica, let me stay with you as we take a turn here. Let's take a quick look back actually to where we compare to 15, 20 years ago as an industry. Resources are much more limited. There isn't a reporter in every city or town council meeting across the state like it used to be. So the question we have is the same one many of our viewers wondered on Twitter. How has that changed how news organizations allocate what they have? And are those decisions always based off of what's best serving to their audience?
The direct answer to that is no. It's not always based on what's best for our audience. And I think if you ask a journalist, we're always going to want to direct those resources into reporters, into those resources for the newsroom. And that doesn't happen. That doesn't correlate with what's happening on the ground right now. Mm-hmm. I hear that from our audiences in every community that we serve every day. Can we get more reporters? Why aren't you at this meeting? Why aren't you at that meeting? Why is coverage 2 days late in a print edition? Well, those are all direct impacts from decisions being made up top that trickle down into our newsrooms. 10, 15 years ago, even when I started as a journalist, you were already seeing the effects of trimmed newsrooms. I walked into the Carlsbad Courant-Argus as a green journalist, and there were 10 reporters, half of which had 30 plus years of knowledge in that community. And in my first 3 years there, they retired or left, and out the door walked that institutional knowledge. So readers feel that. And I think that it's definitely hard for reporters, young reporters who are coming into newsrooms, and they don't have that mentorship. They don't have that experience. And we really struggle to bridge that in our reporting.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Algernon, I got a question for you, kind of a bigger picture thing here. As you know, public trust in journalism across the U.S. is tanking. Though local news fares better than the big national brands, certainly in polling. But why is there such a disconnect there in your view?
There are a few reasons for that. Mm-hmm. And some of that can be attributed to shifts in journalism practices based on some of the ownership issues, the changing business models, or sometimes just confusion about the business models, mm-hmm. but also coverage gaps contribute to that. One right. specific to the Deming headlight is that for a long time, the coverage gaps were pretty wide. And so the paper relied on partnerships with local organizations to send us some things, which gets the independent news reporting entangled with PR, with public relations and promotional interests. And so actually, I think some of the independence, going back to some of that independence, which is what we're now trying to do, right. taking that back in some ways enhances trust because they're starting to see more independent fact-checking and probing journalism again. But at the same time, it also has kind of lost some trust with interests that came to rely on the PR aspect right. of the paper. And so we're trying to negotiate that relationship as transparently as we can to make it clear that we can be of assistance in getting information out about what's going on in our community, but we're also doing that independent piece of news factual gathering and investigation that the community really depends on and needs. And so the negotiation of trust there is very dynamic right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Hey, Sean, here's a blunt question for you. For whom are we making journalism these days? The era of the paper of record and such is likely past, as the notion that all stories are for all people. So how do we serve younger folks, communities of color, people who may be distrustful of what we do? What's the answer there in your view?
Ooh, I mean, we're always looking for an answer and solution, but at the beginning, it starts with being present and showing up and actually listening to these voices and hearing from community people. One thing about our model is that we're a Creative Commons website. So all of our stories and photos are available to republish for free. In fact, we are republished pretty much in every major newspaper in New Mexico, all of the Gannett papers that Jessica works for, mm-hmm. Deming Headlight, Albuquerque Journal, Santa Fe New Mexican, Gallup Independent. We're broadcast on many of the public radio stations in New Mexico as well too, Santa Fe Taos. So our news is reaching people in all kinds of different spaces. In fact, in part because our model is a free publish. you know, most newspapers have to pay for an Associated Press fee to republish Associated Press wire stories, or Gannett to pay to republish photos. And all of ours is available for free, which is part of the model of getting news to people that matters. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be present in news and covering a community policy topic, one, you need to include community members. I think that's also where we start to notice a lack of distrust in news, is people weren't seeing themselves in stories. You're hearing from leadership, to Algernon's point, you're hearing from PR people that might be trying to give you spin, people that are paid to talk to you. So when we do with our state-focused government coverage, we really try to include as many community voices of people. And this is not just elected officials or advocates. These are people who are actually impacted by all of the policy decisions that happen in the Roundhouse and over in D.C.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jessica, as more people question how the news is reported, the makeup of newsrooms has become a much clearer picture to consumers because they are predominantly male and white. Now, journalism is certainly not a lucrative career, and often these jobs go to those who can afford internships to live and don't need a whole lot of money. What can editors and publishers do to better diversify their newsrooms?
Well, I think transparency is the place to start, right? So Gannett, to its credit, has for a couple of years now published an annual report that says, here's the makeup of our local newsrooms and our national newsrooms, and made it public. So it's there, the information is there, and we're very aware of where those gaps are, especially on a local basis. Mm-hmm. But we are doing the best that we can, I think, across every newsroom in New Mexico to take a hard look at who is reporting the news. Are they representative of the communities that they serve? I'll give you an example across my newsrooms. For a majority of my time as editor, I was the only person of color and the only Spanish speaker. And we serve populations that are more than 50%, people of color. And
now that's very telling. That's a very telling anecdote you just laid out there. And I can imagine you having to work in a newsroom with this kind of imbalance. It's difficult.
It is. And it's also a matter of culture, right? We started asking ourselves, as we tackle daily reporting, are we including those voices that you wouldn't technically hear of in the past reporting? Mm-hmm. It's exactly as Sean said. Mm-hmm. We want to find those community members who are most impacted and make sure we're telling the stories that they have. But the other part of that is recruitment. We, for a long time, had a really huge gap in the pipeline between college graduates, especially those from New Mexico who knew the state, knew its history, knew its politics, into the newsrooms of New Mexico. But there are great programs in place, and I'm super proud to be part of some of those that get recent college graduates into local newsrooms, get them experience, connect them with networks already present, and build those skills. Mm-hmm. But you know, then again, it's kind of a catch, right? Because now you've got these newsrooms that are really scarce on resources. They're all competing to get these grant monies and these fellows and these interns. So we're kind of right back where we almost started.
That's a brilliant lay of the land right there. I can't thank you enough for doing that. I think the two fellows would agree. That's we can let that stand in for what's happening in newsrooms right now.
Thanks to Algernon, Jessica, and Sean for sharing their time and insights with us. Now for our second panel discussion, featuring three more newsroom leaders with a hand in shaping coverage around the state. Like our last panel, this group talks about ownership's influence on staffing and coverage in an industry where resources are much more limited than they were, even just a decade ago. Gene is joined in studio by Tim Maestas, news director at KOB-TV, Megan Kamrick, news director at KUNM Radio, and Searchlight New Mexico editor Sarah Solovich.
Let's turn to our second panel for this week. Happy to be joined in studio today by Tim Maestas. He's news director at KOB-TV, Megan Kamrick, news director at KUNM Radio, and Searchlight New Mexico editor Sarah Solovich is with us as well. Let's open this up with a discussion and a look at ownership of our local news organizations. As viewers heard in our last segment, there are differences in leadership between a for-profit and a nonprofit newsroom, as well as a family-owned versus corporate organization. Now, Megan, at KUNM, that's affiliated, of course, with the university. But how exactly are you funded, and how does that relate to the mission of public radio?
Sure, Gene. Like a lot of public radio stations, we're a university licensee. Mm-hmm. The university holds our license. They have no editorial input on our coverage. Mm-hmm. We are funded. We have about a $2.2 million budget.
That might surprise most. That's a good size.
I know. Yeah. It feels like it, but it's... you know, there's a lot we have to pay for. about 80% comes from individual donors and local business sponsors, mm-hmm. and then about 20% from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and mm-hmm. foundation grants. For instance, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation funds two of our reporters. They have for quite a while. Yeah. The Thornburg Foundation covers, we have a half-time reporter. Mm-hmm. So so our we don't really have an ownership, we have a license holder.
There you go. That makes sense. So, and that is different
yes.
than everything mm-hmm. else I just set up. But Tim, in your situation, you do work for a family-owned situation, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit different over there. How does that affect newsroom coverage decisions? You know, your station's family-owned. Unlike some of your local competitors, it's just a little bit different. Is there a difference at Channel 4?
There is. Mm-hmm. We are owned by Hubbard Broadcasting. Actually, this year we are celebrating 75 years of ownership wow. under Hubbard. So it's significant, especially in the television industry to be owned by the same owner for so long. For me, I've worked for stations that have been owned by corporate, publicly traded corporations, and I've worked now working for Hubbard, which is family owned. I can say from personal experience, it's a blessing because they are very hands off. We have about 8 TV stations, and they have several dozen radio stations across the country in major markets. Mm-hmm. We are their second largest station behind KSTP in Minneapolis, which is the ABC affiliate. But they are very hands-off. I don't have a corporate news director. I don't have anyone from on high telling us or dictating how the decisions we're making from a daily perspective, also big picture. They really trust local managers to make smart decisions for the communities that they serve. So it's different. It's I'm noticeably different.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Sarah, welcome to the table. First of all, your first Thank time you. Here. Really yes. pleased to have you here. Tell us about what you do there, your funding, of course, same questions at Searchlight New Mexico. How does that work for you guys?
So Searchlight was launched about 5.5 years ago, mm-hmm. and we have always been, you know, a nonprofit that relies largely on foundations. Our largest foundation is the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, but mm-hmm. we also have other national, state foundations. We also have some major philanthropists. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that a foundation might say, we're interested in health coverage, mm-hmm. or we're interested in education, whatever. They'll pick kind of a coverage area mm-hmm. occasionally. But the wonderful thing is they never suggest stories to us. They never mm. tell us what to do. There is absolutely no interference. Mm-hmm. And we're increasing also our individual donors, reader kind of membership and subscribers around New Mexico.
Right. All three of you make a point that you don't get interference from your respective situations. That's important for listeners and viewers to know, Tim, isn't it? I think there's a perception out there that there are things from on high that you have to respond to. How do you beat back that kind of perception?
It's difficult. Yeah. We hear from viewers on both sides of the political spectrum mm-hmm. Pretty frequently, pretty often, accusing us of bias from one end or another. That kind of tells me that we're in the middle. So if there's any comfort in that, there's that. But it's just in doing what we do every day, mm-hmm. You know, we have a mission. We try very hard to be objective and to take that approach with all of our stories and all of our coverage. So there's just a built-in, I think, perception or belief mm-hmm. among not everyone, mm-hmm. But certain viewers that, you know, we have a position or right. we have an agenda, that's right. and that is not the case.
Interesting. I want to stay on this issue of trust, Megan. You know, it's interesting. How do news organizations, I guess, you know, build engagement and trust with your audience? You know, how do you decide what people need to know? Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? It's a very difficult thing to build that kind of trust. Where do you start from every morning on these kind of things?
For sure, Gene, and I think this has become even more huge right. in the times we're in now. Yeah. I think you have to be incredibly transparent about what you do, mm-hmm. and one of my goals is to make that more obvious on our mm-hmm. website. Trusting News is a great organization and okay. has some great templates for mm. how you do that. Okay. Like, this is who we are, this is what we cover, this is why we do it, this is, mm. and news is very bad about telling its story, and now we're kind of seeing the repercussions of that. Right. Yeah. And we haven't wanted to be the story, but like, you have to explain those things right. to people and be super open to criticism and to suggestions. Yeah. And choosing what you cover is a challenge because we're all, you know, I'm one of the smaller public radio stations. I'm like, we can't cover everything.
That's right. That's
so we
right.
have to think about, like, what are we going to leave?
Right.
What can we pick up from other outlets? We work with Source New Mexico a lot. Mm-hmm. We've used things from Searchlight. Mm-hmm. We've rewritten stuff from KOB if we need to.
Sure.
And I just came back from the Public Media Journalists Association conference, and the whole theme was collaboration.
Oh, no kidding.
And cooperation. Oh. Look, we need to figure out, healthy competition is good, but what do people need? Mm-hmm. Because we're losing several newspapers a week on
yes.
average.
Yes.
And we live in a place of news deserts. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think we need to think through that and how we can best serve people mm-hmm. by giving them mm-hmm. what they need. I would love to do more engagement. It's also one of my goals.
Sure.
Lots of stations have someone just committed to engagement.
That's
I don't
right.
have that luxury right.
right
now, but it's very important. So
I have seen that trend. It's actually interesting that you picked up on that too and mentioned that. Last question, I got another thing for Sarah. Who is your audience at KUNM? This comes up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Is it people affiliated strictly with the university,
oh, no.
the lay people? Who is the audience there?
We haven't done an audience survey for a while that I have at hand, but I will mm-hmm. tell you, we reach over half of New Mexico.
Wow.
I mean, we have translators from Socorro up all the way into northern New Mexico.
Right.
So a variety of people are listening to us. I would say from the last data I saw, mm-hmm. they do tend to skew older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is why public media has digital first as its mantra, because we know, I don't have my phone with me, but I would hold it up like
sure.
that's how people yep. are going to get news. Gene, I have an intern who will be a junior, I think, mm-hmm. in the fall, and she had her first story, and she told her family and friends, I'm going to be on the radio, and she said something that said, how do I listen to that?
Interesting. Interesting.
So it's not going to be, as we
That's
call
right.
it, terrestrial radio.
Right, exactly.
It's going to be digital mm-hmm. on your phone. So, that's, if you want the younger audience, you
that's
have to
point.
Meet them where they are.
Another segment on what Megan's talking about, Sarah, I want to pick up on is talk about who gathers the news and shows it to folks, meaning representation, especially in our diverse state. Does that matter? Or folks, do you get feedback saying, I would prefer to see stories by certain types of people in the state? What's your sense of that? And Tim, I want you to pick up on that as well.
I don't think we've ever had a specific question like that, but
yeah.
one of the things that we're most proud of is when we have a story that touches on the Navajo Nation, we have it immediately translated into Diné. Mm-hmm. And then we give it for free to Native Public Media, which is a kind of an umbrella group of
nice.
Native-owned radio and TV stations around mm-hmm. the country. And so that story will appear in many, like, oral, completely mm-hmm. oral Diné forms.
That's exciting.
But we've worked really hard. When I go to conferences, I think diversity is almost preponderates. It is the conversation among all news outlets across the country. And it is just very, it's really a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are the biggest challenges that you've seen? Or any commonalities from those events you've been to?
Well, for us, the biggest challenge, is covering such an enormous state,
yeah.
Like New Mexico,
yeah.
Because, that is our mission, and we're always, we don't just stay in northern New Mexico or central, so sending people with a small staff mm. across, the state mm-hmm. is very difficult, and, we're a very small staff, so
mm-hmm.
that is, it's expensive. Journalism is mm-hmm. Investigative journalism is incredibly expensive.
Yes.
And to get people who are experienced and just understand the mission, but also the values of traditional journalism.
Let me throw this in there as well. Tim, we're in a diverse state, right? I mean, how do we make sure it's not a checkboxing exercise? And then to follow up to that is, what is the role of journalism in New Mexico in 2023? Just a big question right there. What is our mission as journalists here at all the challenges we have in New Mexico right now?
Well, bouncing off what Sarah mentioned, mm-hmm. In television, this is the second largest market in the nation geographically. We are just behind
wow.
Salt Lake City. We cover the entire state. Las Cruces is technically in the El Paso market. But we still cover stories out of Las Cruces. Las Cruces viewers can still receive our signal over the air.
Mm-hmm.
We cover Southwest Colorado. We cover Northeast Arizona. So that that makes covering news in this market difficult. When it comes to recruiting, staffing, I can tell you in the last several years, it has become more difficult than ever to recruit. I think there are a number of factors specifically related to the television news industry. It's not exciting or as glamorous as it used to be on television. Everybody's on a screen now. Right. Everybody is on Facebook, on YouTube. It's just not as glamorous or as exciting as it used to be. That's one thing. Another thing is recruiting, specifically New Mexico, we're a small state. We're a flyover state. A lot of people have heard about New Mexico, but they've never been here. They've been to our surrounding states. So there's a lot of curiosity and apprehension about coming to a place where they're not really familiar with. When it comes to recruiting, I've made an effort to recruit locally. UNM now has a great fellowship and internship program. I've hired two former fellows are now full-time employees with KOB. The benefits out of that are they're local. They know the local issues. They know what people in this market care about. So that is where I'm at with recruiting. It's a challenge now.
Can I jump in and say, we have the New Mexico Local News Fund. Is that what you're talking about, the fellows program through UNM? So we've had two fellows, too. That's my intern this summer. And our other fellow, Jeanette Didios, who we then, who is Dene and Hickory Apache, we've kept her on under our Thornburg grant. So, and then Mia Casas is our intern this summer. And another full-time employee we have now under Kellogg, Taylor Velasquez, started with us as a student employee. So those are my three folks of color in my newsroom, Gene, and they were recruited locally.
There you go.
And that's really important because it is a very competitive market for talented, diverse journalists. And we've already had someone plucked away to Colorado Public Radio.
That's right.
Good for her.
It's hard to keep talented people here.
But, you know, we have
here.
The salaries are lower here.
That's right.
And yeah, New Mexico's like, is that in America?
At the same time, you know, we're a top 50 market. There are about 210 television markets in the nation. We're a top 50. It's a good size market.
Thank you.
So it's very possible to earn a good living here and for people to establish themselves and earn good livings and stay here quite a while. So my reality as a top 50 news director is I see a lot of people come and go. Viewers will see a lot of people come and go, but there's also a good amount of people who fall in love with New Mexico for whatever reason. They meet the love of their life, or they start a family, or they just love it here.
That's right.
And that's not surprising,
that's right.
But they end up staying here. So there's also a rich amount of talent, a rich bank of talent here. And I think New Mexicans should appreciate that.
Yeah.
There are people in this market, radio stations, newspapers, television stations, who could very well be working in much larger markets, but they're here.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent here.
It's, you know, the news that we see in this market is good, high quality journalism.
Good
stuff. There's so many good stories here.
Yeah.
And I also see that one of the great advantages is hiring people who are from New Mexico.
Yes.
One of our most treasured reporters is Alicia Guzman, who's from Truchas. And she lately started reporting on the nuclear industry, and particularly what's happening at Los Alamos. And she is able to tell the stories of Northern New Mexicans working, you know, at LANL and what's happening there and the impact on the state in a way that nobody from anywhere else in the country
is able to write about that. I'm glad you guys got those stories in about your staff. That actually means something. Again, perception is everything. Not getting orders from on high, hiring local. You guys are doing great stuff. Thanks, you all.
Thanks for listening this week, everyone. Next week here on the podcast, we're going to keep forging ahead with our assessment of journalism in our state, but with some different perspectives. Gene hosts two more panels, one with a group of non-journalists who consume news, and the other with two prominent Black journalists who talk about the difficulties of getting Black issues covered in New Mexico. For now, thanks again, everyone. Please keep an eye on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube throughout the week. We'll be posting updates and other news items leading up to our show on Friday night. Thanks again, everyone. I'm Senior Producer Lou DeVizio for Friday, July 14th, 2023. This is New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone.